Now, why would Joshua not depart from the tent of meeting? Since Joshua was a military man, maybe he was to guard the tent. That could be, but the context doesn't seem to indicate, at least to me, that is the reason why he stayed. I believe the reason why he lingered at the tent of meeting was because he wanted to have a similar relationship with God. The text describes Joshua as a young man. He was an impressionable man. He was a moldable man with a passion and fire inside that needed harnessing and needed to be spent in the right direction. He loved his mentor, who was teaching him so much about God and a vital relationship with him. He was learning to pray. He was learning to wait on the Lord. And later in his life, after taking over for Moses, Joshua would utilize his learning about prayer and his learning about waiting on the Lord as he led the Israelites in the conquering of the Promised Land. On this particular occasion, at the tent of meeting, it is quite possible that Joshua hears the compelling prayer of Moses. In verse 13, Moses prays, "Now, therefore, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thy sight, let me know thy ways, that I may know thee, so that I may find favor in thy sight." Consider, too, that this nation is thy people. In verse 14, the Lord replies, "My presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest." What an example to young Joshua. After the Lord tells the people that they are obstinate and that he would not go with them into the Promised Land, Moses, their leader, intercedes for them. Moses doesn't want to go anywhere without the presence of God. Even as the leader who hears and speaks for God, he still pleads to know God more intimately. God, with his great compassion, acknowledges the prayer of Moses and assures him that he will be with them and give them rest. Put yourself in the moccasins of Joshua, witnessing how your mentor will handle this one. Rising within you is deep respect for your mentor. Even he, as great as he was, yearned to know God more intimately and interceded for a people who continually gave him problems. Do you think you would learn anything if you were Joshua? But you bet you would. This learning will help you through the marathon of life. Now, put yourself in the place of Moses. Walk in his moccasins for a moment. Your mentoree, Joshua, is watching your every step, seeing how you will respond in tough situations. He wants to see if you can not only give thoughtful advice, but if you can actually live out what you say you believe. What if you become impatient yourself waiting on the Lord? Or what if you disagree with His divine leading? What if you're fed up with the people and don't feel much like praying? Remember, Joshua is watching. God is preparing him for leadership through your example and spiritual and practical teaching. Moses not only does what is right, but he multiplies his obedience and correct reactions by impacting Joshua. You see, Moses plays an integral part in molding and shaping Joshua for effective service to the Lord. In Numbers 11, we read of an event that reveals the respect and love Joshua had for his mentor. The people were once again complaining. So Moses asked the Lord for help to carry the burden of all the people. The Lord then told Moses to gather 70 elders to assist in carrying the burden of the people. Moses gathered the 70 elders and stationed them around the tent of meeting. In Numbers chapter 11, verses 25 through 30, we read what happened next. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him. And he took the Spirit who was upon him and placed him upon the 70 elders. And it came about that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. But they did not do it again. But two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the name of the other, Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them. Now, they were among those who had been registered, but had not gone out to the tent. And they prophesied in the camp. So a young man ran and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, the attendant of Moses from his youth, answered and said, Moses, my Lord, restrain them. But Moses said to him, Are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put His Spirit upon them. Then Moses returned to the camp, both he and the elders of Israel. This passage reveals the deep love and respect Joshua had for his mentor. He had seen how Moses spoke with God, how he led the people, and how he deserved the needed respect from the congregation. Joshua viewed Eldad and Medad's prophesying as a threat to his mentor. They had not gone through the difficult times as Moses had. They had not waited on the Lord in the tent of meeting as Moses had. They had not spoken face to face with the Lord as Moses had. They had not been chosen to lead as Moses had. By prophesying, they were infringing upon the prerogatives of Moses. They were treading upon turf that was not theirs. Moses, recognizing the honest misjudgment of Joshua, gently corrects him. Here is another situation where Moses models leadership, guidance, and vulnerability for Joshua to grasp. One of the impactful evidences of this mentoring process upon Joshua is found in the account of the 12 spies reporting back on their mission to Moses and to the rest of the people. Joshua and Caleb were the only two out of the 12 who gave an encouraging report and exhorted the people to go up and possess the land God had promised them. Numbers chapter 13, verses 25 through 33, sets the context for us. When they return from spying out the land, at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites are living in the hill country. And the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight." This situation clearly describes the fear that can control and keep one from doing what is right and commanded by God, when the focus is on the specific situation rather than on God's ability, God's power, God's past performances, and God's promises. Because of his particular response in chapter 14, we can be certain that Joshua was right beside Caleb with strong approval, even though verse 30 only records Caleb speaking. Chapter 14, verses 1 through 10, records Joshua's response to this crucial moment. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. And why is the Lord bringing us into this land? To fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. Can you imagine these people wanting to choose a new leader to lead them back to Egypt again? Once again, they were grumbling and complaining, blaming God, doubting his sure leading, and envying their past enslavement to Egypt over their present condition and their future hope. This was tantamount to slapping God in the face. Joshua tore his clothes at these blasphemous statements. In verses 7 through 9, we find Joshua addressing the congregation, assuring the people that it is a good land, and the enemies will become prey instead of predators, because the Lord is with us, and he has removed their protection from them. These are insightful and mature words from Joshua. In this very volatile situation, he spoke wisely and confidently, not to mention accurately. He exhibited trust, obedience, and strong confidence in God's abilities. It is obvious that his years under the mentorship of Moses had paid off in this moment. Moses had modeled his teaching very, very well. Here is a situation which evidences the positive outcome of successful mentoring. A time for Joshua to assert his faith in Yahweh, to counteract the unbelieving and defeatist attitude of the people and the other spies. Even during the transition of power, Moses still mentored Joshua. Despite Joshua's proven military record, despite his spiritual leadership, and despite his mentory status over the years, Moses would not choose him as successor apart from divine selection. Numbers chapter 27, verses 15 through 23, records the incident for us. Then Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "May the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep which have no shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him, and have him stand before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight. And you shall put some of your authority on him, in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in, both he and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregation." And Moses did just as the Lord commanded him. And he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation. Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. This was payday for all the hard work as a mentoree. Being the leader of an entire nation is not the type of reward every mentoree receives. But for Joshua, the years of mentorship under Moses' gentle hand was worth its weight in gold. Joshua learned to pray, to wait upon the Lord and his sure leading, to care for his people, and he learned many, many other things as well. Moses took Joshua under his wings, tutored him in all the ways of God, and modeled it for him. As Jesus did with his disciples, So Moses modeled leadership and guidance. He placed himself in vulnerable positions with his own people and the armies around them to demonstrate truth. And he trusted Joshua with what he had taught, giving him opportunity to succeed in using his newfound teaching in practical situations. This mentoring relationship trained Joshua to become the successor to Moses, the next leader of the nation Israel. This is the end of number 3.